before we begin the talk, let's take a moment and touch base with our motivation and think that we will listen and share the Buddha's teachings this evening, so that we can use them in our lives to improve the quality of our lives and to help us progress on the path to full awakening. Why do we want to progress on the path to full awakening? Because we want to liberate ourselves from this cycle of existence. And we want to have all the qualities necessary to be able to teach and inspire and lead others out of this, their cycle of existence as well. So all this is fueled by great love and great compassion and the wish to really dedicate our lives to the welfare of other living beings. So in this context, we'll share the Dharma this evening. So take a moment and make that your motivation. Listening to the introduction, and he spoke about the first two volumes of the Library of Wisdom and Compassion, which His Holiness the Dalai Lama is writing and I'm assisting with. And we'll have the book launch for those first two volumes tomorrow evening at Hominsu. Then, volume four. Those are the first two. Volume three comes out next month. Volume four, I just sent to the publisher. Yeah? And volume four is a huge section about the three higher trainings. So what I'll give you tonight is just a little bit, because we only have an hour together or so. But I refer you to that book. And tentatively, it is titled, we just changed the title to Following in the Buddha's Footsteps. So that volume should be out in October. Let's hope. Yeah, you think writing books is easy, dealing with publishers easy. Okay, so three higher trainings. When we study the Four Noble Truths, or the Four Truths, the Four Facts seen as true by Aryas, those beings who see reality directly. Yeah. First one is true dukkha, which is sometimes translated as suffering, true suffering. Suffering is a bad translation. It's dukkha means unsatisfactory. Things that just are unsatisfactory. Yeah? So our life is pretty unsatisfactory, wouldn't you say so? You know, we have nice things happen, but on a whole, is aging, sickness, and death something you look forward to? No, it's unsatisfactory. So that's the first of the four truths. Second one is true origins or true causes. What causes that? And here the Buddha traces it back to ignorance and the afflictive emotions that ignorance produces and the actions or karma that we do under the influence of these emotions. Then the third one is true cessation. And that is talking about ceasing this whole cycle. Yeah. Are you looking for a place to sit? Because there's room up here. Front row seat.
I don't bite.
So,
okay, so the third one is true cessation, stopping that cycle. And the fourth one is the true paths, what we need to practice, the type of consciousnesses that we need to have in order to stop that cycle. So within true paths, the fourth of the four truths, that's where we find the three higher trainings, because they're the things that we need to practice that will lead us to liberation. Okay? So that's where they fit in, the whole framework of the four truths and how the Buddha explains things. Now, you may wonder, why are they called higher trainings? Why not three trainings? Why higher? Because every religion has a form of their own version of the path, what you need to practice. In fact, every religion has their own version of the four truths. Yeah, and they vary vastly depending upon the philosophy lying, you know, in that religion. So here, we call them the three higher trainings for two reasons. One is we practice them based on taking refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Okay? So that automatically makes them different from the practices of non-Buddhist schools. Yeah? Because you may, put it this way, concentration, for example, people from any faith can practice concentration and those methods. But when you practice concentration based on taking refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, it's going to bring a totally different result than if you practice those same methods based on taking refuge in, you know, whatever another religion puts forth. Okay? So, because they're supported by our refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, that's one reason they're called higher trainings. Second reason is that they lead to nirvana. Okay? They lead to the state of peace that is real freedom from the cycle of existence. Now, many other religions also say, oh, we have a path, and, you know, our path leads to our version of nirvana. Yeah? For some religions, it is heaven. For some religions, it's something else. Okay? But from a Buddhist viewpoint, those paths don't bring actual nirvana. They may bring a temporary state of peace, but they don't bring the liberation that lasts forever. Okay? And what we want is freedom that lasts forever. We don't want just, you know, something nice for a while and then, you know, fall down into the lower realms or some kind of suffering situation. Okay? So for those two reasons, supported by refuge in the three jewels, and the three trainings lead to actual nirvana or liberation. That's why they're called higher trainings. Okay? So there are three: ethical conduct, concentration, and wisdom. Now, you've all probably heard of the Eightfold Path, right? And by the way, those of you who love lists and numbers, Buddhism is really the faith for you. Four truths, three higher trainings, Eightfold Noble Path, you know, 51 mental factors. Okay. So if you like lists and numbers, really, you should be a Buddhist. You should be a Buddhist anyway. So, the Eightfold Noble Path, yeah, there's eight of those. There's three higher trainings. You can fit the eight into the three. Okay? So when we talk about the Eightfold Path, the first one is right view. Okay. I'll go back and describe these, but I'm just going to tell you now how they fit together. So right view and right intention. Yeah, those are the first two of the eight. Both of those are subsumed in the higher training of wisdom. Then, the next three of the eight, yeah, right speech, right action, and right livelihood, those three are subsumed in the higher training of ethical conduct. Then the last three, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration, those three are included in the second higher training, the higher training of concentration. Okay? So the Eightfold Path, if I had eight fingers here and three here, just imagine, they fit together. Okay? So let's look at the Eightfold Path, because that gives us a wider presentation of what the three trainings are. And remember, the three trainings, the Eightfold Path, this is what we need to practice to attain liberation from nirvana. So it starts, the Eightfold Path starts with wisdom. Yeah, and wisdom is usually the hardest one. And in the three trainings, wisdom is the last. So how come in the Eightfold Path it's the first? Okay, because when we have the view of wisdom, it sets the stage for understanding all the other of the Eightfold Path. Okay? So, under wisdom, yeah, we have the first one is right view. Now, when we're starting the Eightfold Path, right view refers to understanding karma and its effects. Yeah? There's another kind of right view that is right view of the nature of reality. But we don't start out with that because that's the one that's harder to develop. We start out with right view of karma and its effects. Okay? And so that involves really thinking about cause and effect as it operates on an ethical level, you know, that our actions have an ethical dimension, that what we do creates the cause for what we experience, creates the cause for what we become. In other words, the universe, there's order to it in the sense that causes produce effects. Things are not random. Things don't just happen out of nowhere. Yeah. We may not know all the causes for something. We may not know all the effects of something. But that doesn't mean that they don't exist. It just means we don't know them. And by the way, that's what I figured out magic is. Yeah, we always wonder, what is magic? Magic is when we don't know the cause and effect of something. So it seems like it just happened out of nowhere. So we call it magic. And it's simply because we don't know the cause and effect, how it operates. Doesn't mean there isn't any. There's got to be some. You getting what I'm saying? Yeah? So that's all magic is. Magic is not magic. Yeah? And when we understand, the more we understand cause and effect, the less magical magic is. Okay? So we start off getting some idea about cause and effect. And, you know, to some, so that involves, you know, thinking about karma. In some ways, karma really makes sense to us. In another way, we really have to rely on the Buddha to learn about it, because it's quite a detailed topic. And they say only the Buddha can say for a particular individual what exact action somebody did that brought this particular result. So, for example, we're all sitting here this evening, yeah? So we can say in a general way, we all created some virtue in a previous life because it's ripening in us experiencing something good. You know, we have access to the Dharma, we can hear about it, think about it, and so on. But exactly what each of us did in a previous life that's ripening in our being here tonight, only the Buddha knows that. Okay, way too complex for the rest of us. Okay, so that's when we start out the eight, that's what right view means. Then the second one is right intention. So this also comes at the beginning because our motivation is of crucial importance when we practice the Dharma. Yeah? In other words, the real value of what we do is based on the most part on the quality of our motivation, not on whether other people praise or blame the actions. Okay? So in other words, why we do what we do is something very important for us to be aware of. Because many times we're not aware of why we do what we do. Just some thought enters our mind, we do it, and then later on we wonder, why in the world did I do that? Did you ever have that happen to you? Yeah. Or you act and you do some things and then you find yourself in a situation and you go, how did I wind up in this situation? Okay? It's because of our intention. But when we aren't aware of our intention, just some thought comes in our mind and, you know, we do it. Some thought comes, that person hurt my feeling, so tell them off. Yeah, well, we do it. The thought comes in our mind, oh, that object in that store looks really good. They won't miss it, and I don't have enough money to buy it, so, you know. Yeah? Okay. So when we aren't aware of our intention, we can wind up creating a lot of negativity that we are the ones who will experience the result of. Okay? So that's why our intention is so important. And by the way, some people may praise us for an action that we did and say, oh, you're so wonderful, what you did is so wonderful. But maybe we know inside our motivation was rotten. Other times, we may do something with a really good motivation, but other people misunderstand it and criticize us. So right intention is really pointing that the value of an action is not what other people say about us, what other people think. It's the quality of our intention. In other words, if you want to be a hypocrite in Buddhism, go right ahead. But there's going to be a price to pay. Yeah. Because we're going to experience the result of the causes we create. Okay, so under the right intention, there's three intentions that we want to really develop. Okay? The first one is called renunciation. Now there's different ways of speaking of renunciation. One way is to renounce sensual desire. Now, we're beings born in what's called the desire realm. Yeah, because we have all sorts of desirable objects all around us, don't we? You know, we're totally fixated on external objects. Yeah. This is a shopping center, right? What do you do in a shopping center? You look at all the external objects and you think, oh, which ones do I like and can I get? Which ones don't I like that okay? So we're totally entranced, addicted even, to external objects. And that includes people too, you know? So it's very difficult for us to actually look inward and be introspective, because when we wake up in the morning and all day long, our senses are operating, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mental sense, and we're drawn towards the external world, okay? And as soon as we're drawn towards the external world, the mind starts to discriminate. I like this, give it to me. It's mine, you can't have it, yeah? Or we look at things and we go, get rid of this junk, okay? So we're never really at peace in our life with respect to the external world. We're always grabbing things and pushing them away, going up when we like something, going down when we don't like it, okay? And in the process, we can create a lot of negativity. Because we can lie to get what we want, we can steal to get what we want. Yeah, things like this, okay? So, that first one, renunciation, one meaning is to overcome all that sensual desire that makes us kind of like, we're kind of like puppets on a string. And our sensual, you know, sensual desire pulls the strings and makes us act. We're not really free. Okay. So that kind of renunciation of sensual desire is the first thing. Now, when we say renouncing sensual desire, okay, what we're renouncing is the mind that is obsessed and addicted to external objects. Okay, we're not renouncing pleasure. And many people, when they hear renunciation, they think, "Oh, we can't have any pleasure anymore. Buddha says pleasure is bad." Does the Buddha look like somebody who's unhappy, who doesn't have any pleasure in his life? No. Okay, there's nothing wrong with pleasure. Okay. Our problem is when we get attached to it. That's the problem. Yeah, I can't just eat some ice cream and forget it. I eat some ice cream and I want more. And I want chocolate chip mint. Okay. I don't want Rocky Road. I don't want red bean. I want chocolate chip mint. And as soon as I finish that, I want more. Okay? So that's the problem, the mind of desire, of attachment. The pleasure, if we enjoy it and we let it be, no problem. But our problem is we don't let it be. Okay. Another meaning of renunciation is not just renouncing sense desire, but renouncing all rebirth in samsara. Yeah, because there's not only the desire realm, which is the one we live in now, but there's also the form and formless realms, where there's different kinds of celestial beings and who have very deep states of samadhi, of concentration, and they abide in those realms of the form and formless realm. So to attain liberation from all of samsara, we have to renounce the desire to be born in all three of those realms. Okay. So that's the first part to the intention. Yeah. So to really, you know, practice the Dharma, we have to start out with some form of renunciation. And we always start out small, and then as we practice, it gets bigger. Okay? The second part of right intention is it's benevolence. Okay, I was trying to come up with the right word. Benevolence. Benevolence means love, kindness, like metta or maitri. Yeah. Benevolence. We want to have a positive attitude towards other living beings. We want to have a kind attitude. Yeah. So that when we relate to other living beings, we can be harmonious with them. If our mind is filled with jealousy, there's no benevolence. Yeah. How many of you get jealous? Oh, some of you never get jealous. I see. We'll test that out. Let's try this again. How many of you get jealous? Oh, you don't? Oh, okay. So when there's jealousy in the mind, there's no benevolence. We don't wish others well when we're jealous of them. When we're jealous, we want them to lose whatever happiness they have. Yeah. It's kind of an awful state of mind, but it comes up, doesn't it? Yeah. So instead, what we want to really cultivate is an attitude of benevolence, wishing other living beings well. Yeah? I mean, why shouldn't we wish other people well? If they were well, if they were happy, if they were contented, then they would act in a very calm and peaceful way. It's when they're not well, they're not content, that's when sentient beings act awfully. So actually, if we want to be happy, we should wish others to be happy. Because when they're happy, then they don't do harmful things. Yeah. If we're jealous, if we're angry, and we want somebody else to suffer, what we're actually doing is bringing suffering on ourselves. Because if somebody else suffers, they're going to be in a bad mood, they're going to be upset. And who are they going to take it out on? Us. Okay? So that's why we should really wish our enemies well. Yeah, think about it. Yeah. The people who harm you because they're unhappy. Okay, they don't harm you because they're happy. Happy people don't go around harming others. Yeah. When you're happy, you're just happy. You don't harm anybody. So the people who harm you do so not because they want to harm you, but because they're unhappy. And they're seeking some relief from their pain. And they're confused how to bring that about. So in their ignorance, in their confusion, they harm us. In the same way, when we do harmful things towards others, it's because we're ignorant and we're confused and we're unhappy at that moment. Yeah. It's not that we really want to harm somebody else. It's that we're unhappy and we want to some way release our unhappiness. And of course, harming others doesn't really make us happy. At the beginning, we may say, yeah, I got you. I feel so delighted I made you suffer. But how do you feel about yourself in the long term if you rejoice after you make somebody else suffer? Does that really create happiness in you? No, it doesn't, does it? It creates guilt, regret, shame. So, better not to harm others, because it only harms us. Okay, so in right intention, we had renunciation, we had benevolence, or kindness, and the third one is what Gandhiji practiced, ahimsa, non-violence, non-cruelty. In other words, compassion. So to relate to every living being with a wish for them not to suffer and to be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. And to never ever be cruel or violent to them. Now think for a moment, if everyone in the world abstained from violence for one day, just one day. Think about it. Our whole world would be entirely different, wouldn't it? If nobody had enacted physical violence on others, nobody enacted verbal violence, nobody even had mental violent thoughts. I mean, the newspapers would not know what to write about. Yeah? Everything would be completely different. Just one day if everybody did that. So this one of compassion or nonviolence is so important. This is what Gandhiji practiced, you know, when he was seeking independence for India. It's what Martin Luther King practiced when he was seeking civil rights for African Americans. It's what His Holiness the Dalai Lama is practicing, seeking autonomy for the Tibetans. And so this attitude of ahimsa or nonviolence is very precious. Yeah, you can still stand up and oppose injustice, but without harming anybody. Yeah. Okay, so those three are right intention, and right view and right intention go under wisdom, the higher training of wisdom. Okay? Then the next three go under higher training of ethical conduct. So right speech, right action, and right livelihood. Or actually, right livelihood might come back, come before right speech. No, it comes after. Okay. I meant to say it might come before right action. No, it's the last one. Okay. So the first one is right speech. So our speech is very important. We can create so much happiness with speech. We can create so much pain with speech. Yeah. We had a little saying when we were children, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Did you have that thing?
Yeah.
Is that true? No. Words can sometimes hurt more than sticks and stones. So we have to be quite careful with what we say. So there's four kinds of speech that we want to abandon and four kinds that we want to adopt. So first one, what is it? Starts with an L.
Lying.
Okay. So lying, when you know something to be like this and you say the opposite. Okay. So intentionally deceiving others for self-gain. Then somebody always comes up when says, but, do we have to tell the truth in every situation? If a hunter, if a deer just ran by and a hunter comes and says, where did that deer go? Did you say, right over there, you can go shoot him? No. Okay? Yeah. Because if we tell the truth and it harms somebody, that's not really the truth. Nagarjuna, the great Indian sage, said, truth not only has to be factually true, it has to be kind. It has to not cause harm. So this is something to remember. So to try and speak truthfully. Now, does that mean when, somebody invites you over to dinner and they cook the kind of food that you don't like, that you grandma just cooked the food and it's just exactly what you can't stand. And grandma says, how do you like the food? Do you say, grandma, I can't stand it. Why did you cook this junk? Okay? And then you say, but I told the truth. Yeah, that's what I really thought. No. When grandma asks you, how do you like the food? She's not really asking you about the food. What she's saying is, I care about you, and I wanted to show how much I care about you by cooking dinner for you. Do you understand how much I care about you? Are you getting that? That's what grandma's really asking. Yeah? So when she says, how do you like the food? You say, it was so kind of you to cook all day and invite me over for a meal. I really appreciate that, and I like spending time with you. And that's the truth. You're not answering about the food. But you are answering the real question that she's asking, which is, I care about you, do you understand that? Okay? So you let her know that you understand that. That's truthful speech. Okay? Second kind of speech, one aspect to abandon, one aspect to practice. The aspect to abandon is speech that causes division. Okay, so divisive speech. Yeah. So divisive speech is, you're in your workplace, okay? You don't like somebody. You go to somebody else and say, that person over there, I can't stand them. Guess what they did? And in that way, you turn this person against this person. Okay? Or this person, yeah, tells you that they have a problem with somebody else, and you go to that person and say, so and so told me they can't stand your guts. Okay, so then that person doesn't like this person. So this happens in offices a lot. Yeah, and we gang up against somebody in the office, we scapegoat them, everybody talks behind their back and criticizes them. Isn't that a lovely human habit? It's so awful, isn't it? You know, the way we talk badly about people behind their back. Yeah, as if we were the perfect ones who never did anything wrong. Okay. So we get together with our friends and we criticize person A and B and C and D and F and G and H and O and P and Q, and we criticize all these other people together, and the conclusion of the conversation is, we are the two best people. Because all those other people have so many faults. Okay, that's divisive speech. Instead, what we want to do is speak in ways that brings harmony. Okay? So either to prevent arguments, or if two people are not getting along, to say things that will help them get along again, that will help them reconcile. Okay? Then, the third kind of speech to abandon is harsh speech. So this is yelling and screaming and telling people their faults and accusing them of things they did do and accusing them of things they didn't do, humiliating them, making fun of them, ridiculing them, teasing them, okay, insulting them, verbally abusing them. You got what I'm talking about? So this is a very common form of speech. And it's unfortunately one that occurs in families a lot. Yeah? When you scream at your children, yeah, you know how it always starts. If I've told you once, I've told you 1,000 times, pick up your clothes off the floor. There are certain things all parents kind of say. This is one of them, isn't it? Yeah? Yeah. How many of you are parents? Do you say this? Yeah. Are there certain things that your parents said to you that you vowed you would never say to your kids? Are there certain things like that? And then you find yourself saying those things to your kids anyway. So it's kind of like, you know, Joe and Susie, who live across the street, they're such good students. They study so hard. And what did I do to deserve a child like you? You're so lazy. That's another thing parents typically say, isn't it? Yeah. How's a child feel when you say that? Or maybe you don't speak like that to your kids. Maybe you speak like that to your husband or wife. You idiot! Why did you do that? It's not good for the family. Okay, so that's all harsh speech. How many of you practice that regularly? Oh, only one person. You and I are the only ones, huh? jealous. Don't speak harshly. Wow. Yeah, you and me, you know. Okay, then the fourth kind of speech to abandon is idle talk. So this is when we talk about, did you hear about the sale at, what's the supermarket here everybody goes to? NTU, yeah.
NTC.
NTUE.
C.
NTUC.
Cold stores.
Cold stores, that's easier to say. Do they ever sell hot food at the store, cold storage? Yeah? I want to go into a grocery store called cold storage. It gives me the chill. But maybe in Singapore you want the chill. Yeah. So we talk about the latest sale at cold storage. We talk about what the neighbors in the flat below are doing, and the neighbors in the flat above, and the neighbors on either side. We talk about our colleagues at work. We talk about politics. Oh, except Singaporeans don't talk about politics. Americans talk about politics. Yeah, that's when we talk and don't scream. We talk about sports. Yeah? Yeah? Do you talk about sports? Yeah? Yeah, the women maybe not so much. The men? Oh, yeah, you know? It's like so interesting where that ball is. I mean, that's basically what sports are all about, is where you put a ball. And it's really emotional, you know? And your whole livelihood. I mean, football players in the States make millions of dollars all because of what they do with a ball. This is something that just astonishes me, you know? My nephew played football, my dad played golf, and you know, on Sunday, that's what they talked about. Was, you know, where that ball went. Anyway, okay, so we waste a lot of time in idle talk, you know, and gossip. So instead, what we want to do is learn to speak at appropriate times about appropriate topics. And instead of harsh speech, we want to practice kind speech that encourages others, that inspires others, that makes people feel good about themselves, that directs them on a path of virtue. Okay? So that's the first of the four that, first of the three that fall under right ethical conduct, okay, right speech. Then right action, okay, so this is abandoning killing, yeah, of any sort, taking other beings' life, and instead what we want to practice is protecting life. Second part of right action is abandoning stealing, and protecting people's possessions. And then third is abandoning unwise and unkind sexual behavior and practicing using sexuality wisely and kindly. Okay. So unwise and unkind sexual behavior refers to if you're in a relationship, going with somebody outside of your relationship, or even if you're single, going with somebody who's in a relationship. Okay. It also refers to having sex where there is a chance of spreading diseases, yeah, or where just using people for your own physical gratification in such a way that their feelings could be hurt. Okay, so we want to abandon those three that are done with physically. Yeah. So that's the second of the eight that fits into the first of the three. Yeah. Then there's right livelihood. Okay. So for lay people, right livelihood means earning your living in an honest way. Okay? Without breaking laws and doing and having an occupation, a career that does not involve harming others. Okay? So you don't want to work for the extermination company. Yeah. You don't want to work for a company that produces chemicals that are used to kill. You don't want to work for a company that produces weapons. Okay? So you want to have an occupation that does not directly harm others, and one that you can do with honesty, that doesn't involve cheating or deceiving other people. Okay. Some people in Singapore, I get asked this many times, they tell me that their bosses want them to lie. Yeah? Because you close more business deals if you lie. And they say, what do? My boss wants me to lie. And I say, tell your boss no, you're not going to lie. Then I'll lose my job. And then I say, good. Because who wants to work for a company that's asking you to be dishonest? Do you want to work for an employer that is dishonest, that cheats and lies and deceives customers and clients? I don't want to. Yeah? So there's plenty of other jobs. You quit that one, you find another job. It's not the end of the earth. Okay, so those, and then for monastics, yeah, we have to get our food and clothing, medicine and shelter also in honest ways. Okay, not by flattering people, not by hinting, not by giving people a small gift so they'll give us a bigger one, not by putting people in a position where they can't say no, okay, and not by being a hypocrite. So we have all sorts of regulations too about how to get the requisites for life. Okay, so right speech, right action, right livelihood are all part of right ethical conduct. Okay. Then we go on. So the right view and right intention are setting the stage, giving us the foundation. Then the first thing we need to do is get our ethical conduct correct. You know, stop harming others, reform our physical and verbal actions. So that's why we have right speech, right action, right livelihood. Then, based on ethical conduct, then we can really go into meditation. Okay? And so that has the three, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. Actually, right effort, they put under right concentration, but it actually applies to all the other seven. Okay, so they just put it there, but it pervades the other ones. So right effort is really putting energy into creating the causes for the kinds of results we want to experience. Yeah. His Holiness the Dalai Lama always says that, you know, just praying to the Buddha is not going to bring us full awakening. It won't even bring us a good life. Yeah. And so you see here, many people pray to the Buddha, Buddha, please, can I win the lottery? Here's the Buddha who wants to lead you to liberation. You don't care beans about liberation, you just want Buddha. What lottery number ticket should I buy? Okay. And then there's people who, you know, it's like, Buddha, I made an offering. I gave you some apples and oranges. So please bless my mind stream with instant dharma realization. Okay. Then there's people who do it the other way. Buddha, first make it so I win the lottery. Then I'll make an offering to you. Okay, so Buddha, first you deliver, then I'll do something. Yeah. Instead of first I make the offering, then the Buddha. So, you know, this kind of just praying like that's not going to solve our samsara. Okay. We have to really put dedicated energy and effort into practice. Then, right mindfulness. Yeah, this one I could talk a long time on, but I won't. At least not tonight. And so right mindfulness is, you know, in the Buddhist context, we're practicing the four establishments of mindfulness. So establishing mindfulness on our body, on our feelings, on our mind, and on phenomena. Okay. So mindfulness, Buddhist mindfulness, yeah, involves observing and understanding. Mindfulness is coupled with wisdom, because it's bringing deep understanding. Yeah. This is different than secular mindfulness, the ones that you buy apps for, okay? The ones you learn in your company or whatever. Secular mindfulness is just bare attention, bare awareness on what we're feeling or experiencing. Yeah. And that can be taught in a totally secular way, free from, you know, any kind of Buddhist understanding or whatever, and it can benefit many people. But that is not Buddhist mindfulness, the kind of mindfulness that we practice on the Eightfold Path. Okay? So the mindfulness of the Eightfold Path, we're really trying to understand what our body is. Yeah, we live in our body all the time. Do we understand this thing? Do we pay attention to it? Do we understand how to work with it? Yeah, or are we spending most of our time just trying to make it comfortable? So, understanding the body, understanding our feelings, yeah? Pleasurable, painful, neutral feelings. What happens when they arise? Yeah? When we feel pleasurable feelings, what happens? Attachment comes, I want more. When we experience unpleasant feelings, what happens? Revulsion, get it away from me. When we experience neutral feelings, what happens? We zone out. Okay, confusion, ignorance. So understanding our feelings and what our feelings cause. What are the results of these feelings? Then understanding our mind. Now again, we have a mind, we live with it all day long. Do we have any idea what our mind is and how it works? Yeah. Isn't that amazing? We have a body, we have a mind, and we understand so little about them. It's really amazing. Yeah. This is why we say ignorance is at the root of samsara. And so we try and understand our mind. And then fourth is understanding all the other kinds of phenomena. Okay, so the five hindrances, the Eightfold Path, the seven awakening factors, okay, all these other sets of numbers. Okay. So that's mindfulness. And then concentration is learning to focus the mind single-pointedly without it getting distracted and running all over the universe. Because when we can focus the mind in an undistracted way, then it's easier to develop wisdom. So we've gone through all eight, and now we cycle back again to the first one, to wisdom. But this time, because on the basis of ethical conduct, we've developed mindfulness and concentration, this time that leads to wisdom that knows the ultimate truth. How do persons and phenomena actually exist? What is their real mode of existence? And that's the right view that will lead us to liberation from samsara altogether. Okay? So the first right view at the beginning is about karma. When we circle around again to right view, after going through all eight, that right view is talking about how things actually exist. Okay? So, there we have the Eightfold Path subsumed in the three higher trainings, which are three branches of true paths, which is the fourth of the four truths of the Buddha. Okay, so now a little bit of time for questions and comments and so on.
Thank you, Venerable, for your sharing. I've got a question about renunciation. Mm-hmm. Personally, I find renunciation quite abstract, like an abstract concept. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering what would be your advice to contemplate more about renunciation. And I think, yeah, for me to develop a true understanding of what renunciation is. And I also wonder whether contemplating about the ultimate truth, for instance, would help in developing an understanding of renunciation.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure. Good question. So contemplating both karma and the ultimate truth, both of those can help you develop renunciation. Also, contemplating the fault of cyclic existence can help you wish to be free from it as well. Perhaps an easier way to express renunciation is learning to counteract certain bad habits you have. Okay? Because you said renunciation is kind of abstract. Yeah. But if you think, okay, I have a bad habit of spending money on things that I don't really need. Yeah, anybody have that bad habit? Yeah? And we use more than our fair share of the world's resources, and we just think, oh, I want this, let's go out and buy it. But actually, we don't need it. It's not going to make us that happy. Yeah. At the beginning, maybe we get a thrill. Oh, I got this new pair of shoes. Whoop-dee-doo. And then after we wear them one day, how much pleasure do you get out of your new pair of shoes? You've forgotten about them, yeah? And you don't wear them for another month or so. Okay? So looking at the bad habits we have, of just chasing after material things that we really don't need. Yeah? So learning to control that habit already is a huge step towards renunciation. Yeah? Let's simplify our life. Instead of having so much junk in the house, let's have less stuff, give away some of the things that we have. What? I can't give away that? If I give it away, I might need it. Yeah? I have 85 pairs of shoes. I can't give away two of them because then I'll want them later on. So, you know, to watch how our mind gets attached to these things and to break that habit of attachment. Yeah? And instead to cultivate a sense of contentment. You know, what I have is good enough. Yeah? Oh, but my colleague just got this and that and the other thing. That's nice. I hope they enjoy it. Instead of, oh, they have it, I don't have it, what's everybody going to think of me when they all have it and I don't have it? Let them think what they want. Actually, I don't think they're going to spend much of their life thinking about us. Yeah? We worry so much about what other people think about us, but how much time in their life are they going to really spend thinking about us? Yeah, they're too busy thinking about themselves a lot.